No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, welcome to the show. Others receiving votes. The December 11th edition. I'm Pat Forty, joined as always by Gene Wojciechowski and Brian Fisher. Fellas, I kind of thought we had hit a light week. I thought we might actually, you know, be looking around for a topic or two, kind of needing to invent something. No, this is college football. The news never stops. And so we ended up with a loaded show. We will have our first ever guest on this show, a momentous, historic occasion. And we will certainly go quite deep on the Sherrone Moore situation at Michigan. There was a lot to unpack there, and it is increasingly ugly. Frankly, this is no longer just a coach who was fired. This has gone from a personnel action to a potential criminal case. To the last of my knowledge, Thursday morning, he was booked into custody in Washtenaw County Jail. Wednesday night, that still appears to be the case as of 8:30 this morning. So we'll certainly get into that. And later on, we'll discuss the Heisman Trophy, which will be awarded on Saturday. And we will do commenters commenting on comments. And we will pick the Army-Navy game. But before we do all that, we're going to talk about the Notre Dame situation, which really kind of overtook the beginning of the week. The Notre Dame snub, the Notre Dame reaction to the snub. And that's where our guest comes in. We're going to have Ivan Maisel, College Football Playoff Selection Committee member, and the author of a book about Frank Leahy, the Notre Dame legend, former colleague of Gene and I's at ESPN, full disclosure, a longtime friend, but he's going to tell us what he can about the playoff selection committee process and how we got to the point of a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of outrage and mayhem and a temporarily canceled book signing at the University of Notre Dame. Quite a chain of events. Yeah. So we're going to get to Ivan here in just a few minutes. But, guys, I'm just interested. Gene, let's start with you. Your thoughts on how the Notre Dame situation has boiled down. You said on our show on Sunday that you were shocked they weren't in the bracket. What have you felt watching the aftermath of that?
I just want to preface this by saying once again that I think Notre Dame was entirely a worthy playoff team. Certainly a team that could have made a real run at a national championship, but the committee thought otherwise. And I understood why athletic director Pete Bebakwa went on the Dan Patrick show in the immediate aftermath of that on Monday and expressed his anger, his outrage, his exasperation, how flummoxed he was. Fine. But then it just went on and on and on. And there became a point where you thought he was going to appear on Good Morning Mishawaka or Drive Time in Fort Wayne. At some point, you made your point. We understand the frustration. but now it's time to move on. And then it got to, we got a food fight with Brett Yormark, the a Big 12 commissioner, and that's egregious behavior because of what Bavakwa said about Jim Phillips of the ACC. Anyway, they sort of lost the moral high ground to me at some point. And then in one press conference, we heard that there's a memorandum of understanding that moving forward, Notre Dame, if it's in the top 12 of the playoff standings, if it stays at 12, would automatically be guaranteed a spot in the playoff, which I thought was a little hypocritical, given that if we used that same formula this year, Miami would have gotten knocked off, but Notre Dame would have been perfectly fine with that. No outrage there. And finally, fellas, I did not hear any of this outrage about process or the CFP selection shows on Tuesdays last year when Notre Dame was selected to the CFP playoff. So, you know, at some point just became a little silly to me.
Yeah, there, as always, there's situational outrage involved in whoever is outside of the bracket. You know, that's when the system becomes a problem, when the system doesn't help your team, right? So yeah, there was a lot going into this, a whole bunch, and we're gonna get Brian's feelings on it, and we'll all add some more here. We've got our first ever guest in Others Receiving Votes history, and there he is. We've got a quad box here, Ivan Maizel. As I mentioned in the introduction, a longtime friend and former colleague of Gene and mine at ESPN, has covered the sport meritoriously for decades, and is coming off his first year on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. And I have to say, I mean, you look relatively sane and together here, Ivan, coming off of that year. What it was like?
Oh, gee, it went great, as you can tell from the last week. No, it actually, you know, it's an impossible job. You're certainly not going to make everybody happy. People kept asking me, was it fun? And I go, no, you know, it wasn't fun. It was intellectually challenging. It was great people. But at the end of the day, you know, as it often does with these things, essentially we were trying to fit 3 feet into two shoes, and that's never going to go well to where everybody's happy. And it certainly didn't this week.
Yeah, I'll ask something else real quick, and then I'll let Brian and Gene weigh in here as well. Let's just to clarify, you had a partial recusal for Notre Dame. Yes. And for Stanford, right? You're a Stanford alum. You have just written an excellent book on former Notre Dame coach Frank Leahy. What does a partial recusal mean in terms of your role with the committee?
A full recusal means you have to leave the room. Partial recusal, which was instituted this year, means you can stay in the room and you can talk about the other teams surrounding the team you're recused from, but you cannot talk about or vote concerning the team that you're partially recused from. So, you know, my computer would, when it would present everybody else with Notre Dame, Team B, Team C, Team D, mine would just, all I could do was press something that said, okay, you know, like present, like, you know, just, and, so, you know, as you can imagine, for much of the wee Saturday night, the wee hours of Sunday, and then again after we woke up Sunday, I could have just been sitting there eating a bag of popcorn and watching. You know, I mean, it was fascinating, and I was glad I was there. And it was, what was frustrating to me was I would start to make a point, and I would get to, and I would forget, you know, because I'm so focused on these teams, and I'd start to talk, and then I would just, you know, if I got anywhere near Notre Dame, there would be like a, you know, a red light would come up. You know, they go, okay, all right, stop. You know, yeah, damn it. But, you know, that was the deal.
Ivan, we've a couple of us have obviously gone through the mock selection committee exercise, which is, you know, it's interesting and a good insight into the process. But that's always looking back at a past year. I'm kind of curious, yeah, what was it just like from just your standpoint going in, week out doing this process, and what you kind of learn about things that you maybe didn't expect?
Well, I went through the mock selection too, Brian, and I was kind of bored by it. I mean, because you know how it comes out, you know, and I just sort of, you know, it was mildly interesting, but I kind of went in one ear and out the other. Obviously this was a lot different. And it was just a lot of discussion over the amount of data is mind-boggling. That, you know, it's the CFP has a deal with Sports Source Analytics, and there are stats there that I didn't even know existed. There are stats there that I should have come up with myself that are painfully obvious. And everybody, and I think the beauty of the system to me is that there is no, you know, people say, well, you know, what's the primary? Is it head to head? Is it common opponents? There's not one that, you know, is the crown achieving stat. Everybody can pick their own deal. You know, one coach like this, one coach like that. You know, I was really interested in relative scoring and relative offense and relative defense. And that's the one I was pissed I didn't think of myself. You know, if you give up 20 points a game and I score 30 on you, then my relative scoring against you is 150%, you know. And what fascinated me about those numbers is they are a great predictor of success. Relative offense, relative defense, relative scoring. And so I kind of glommed onto those. And then there's schedule strength and record strength and on and on and on, and I'll stop. But there was just so much data that we were awash in.
I just felt like I was in a stats class back in college, and I almost dozed off.
You and me both, I'm sure, did really well on stats. I think I lasted a week in my stats class.
Ivan, you wrote
Delta
this
to me as an airline.
You wrote this tremendous book called American Coach, The Triumph and Tragedy of Notre Dame Legend Frank Leahy. I have it here. I'll show it to our audience.
There you go. And good visual, good prop, Gina.
You're going to make an appearance.
Thanks.
You're going to make an appearance, which we will discuss the drama involved in that. But Athletic Director Pete Bevacqua, in his criticism of the committee, said he simply didn't understand the process. And when you make this appearance, there are going to be Notre Dame fans there that are going to ask you the same sort of question, that their confusion about the process in the final week or two of the choices. What can you tell them about that process and how it turned out that Notre Dame was left out?
Well, I spoke to a Notre Dame alumni club last night in Sarasota, and ostensibly it was going to be about the book, and I just stood up and said, "All right, we'll get to the book. What do you want to know?" And they said, "Nah, we're good with the playoff. Let's talk about the book." No, they didn't actually say that. And I tried to, I explained how we do it. And when it got to the final weeks, I said, look, you know, there was a couple of things. And one is the thing that Hunter Yurecek said a couple of times coming down the stretch, which was, you know, we never got to Miami and Notre Dame alone. And there was always a team, one or more teams in the discussion with them. And I think he said Sunday, you know, BYU was there, and we had, you know, we never got to Notre Dame Miami because we had Notre Dame ahead of BYU. And so it was never just a head to head. And the other thing I tried to point out, and this really didn't occur to me till the end, you know, now it all looks crystal clear. But when you're in the middle of it and you don't know, you know, we didn't know Miami was going. When we, our first poll, Miami, and again, Hunter said this the other day, Miami had lost 2 of 3 and didn't look very good. And Notre Dame already had its momentum going. And so that's why they were 8 spaces apart. And that fully formed picture of Miami or anybody else was not complete until the end of the season. And that's, you know, nobody at Notre Dame wants to hear that. And it's not a satisfying answer. But, you know, to me, that explains it. You know, now you can see it completely. But, you know, and it looks obvious in retrospect, but it certainly didn't in the moment.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Point's been made by several people, myself included, that I'm not sure the TV show on Tuesday night serves the committee well, or even the weekly rankings.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Yeah. What do you think of, as a committee member? A, do you watch the show? B, what's your reaction watching the show? And C, would you rather just do this one time at the end?
Well, with the caveat way above my pay grade, but I watched the show when I wasn't traveling home, and you know, and I think or a couple of times I had book events Tuesday night, you know, so I didn't get to see it. But I saw probably 4 of them. My memory when the show began, what Bill Hancock said was, it allows us being the committee, to set the agenda. I mean, think about what would happen if AP and the coaches poll had, you know, their poll all the way, and we got to the end of the season and we had a completely different poll. You know, and oh my God, you know, what were, you know, what is this committee doing? You know, how could we have been 3 all year long and we're 7 now, or, you know, whatever. So, that part of it, I appreciate. And I think that part is smart. Again, explanations week to week, are not going to look very smart at the end. And they may not be consistent. Football is not consistent. You know, things change. And that's not a satisfying at all answer. You know, to your question of whether we should have it, does it have to be every week? I don't know. You know, but it's clearly it's a ratings getter for the worldwide leader. What we think is completely moot. You know, ESPN paid for it. It's a good show for them, and that's pretty much the end of the discussion.
Ivan, I'm curious too. We hear a lot about the personalities, in the room, and certainly going back a couple of years, you always heard that, all right, Barry Alvarez, he spoke up a lot, and I'm kind of curious what the tenor of the room is from your perspective, and especially this year, given that there was a committee chair change right smack dab in the middle of things.
Yeah, Hunter was really put in a tough spot. Within the room, he was terrific, and I actually said this at the end of the meeting Sunday. I really appreciated, I told everybody, I really appreciated the level of respect and civility that was prevalent throughout, throughout the whole season. It's a good group. There was nobody like Barry, and we all know, Barry is out there, and we all love him to death. But this was a very respectful, if you think about the head coaches, because those are the personalities that our listeners and we know best, Mark D'Antonio, not a loud, flashy guy. Mike Riley, world's nicest guy. Chris Ault, just a good old football coach, and a charming. He's a charming guy. I didn't know Chris really at all before this, but really liked him. And everybody, nobody wants to hear this, I know, but the only agenda everybody had was to try to get it right. And that's, and there was a, it never got testy, because there's a lot of guys that were already friends who are in the room. ADs come up kind of the way coaches do. They work together somewhere. They're in the same conference somewhere. I think when Mark Harlan was at South Florida, Troy Dannen was at Tulane. They were both in the American together. Now they're on the committee together at Utah and Nebraska, respectively. So there were a lot of relationships I wasn't aware of. I really, only people I knew in there were the coaches and Jeff Long, that I had any kind of relationship with. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Ivan,
That was a long answer. Yeah.
No, it was a good answer. It was good.
Yeah.
Without compromising any of the protocol relative to being a committee member, as Saturday and then Saturday night unfolded and you guys kept meeting and talking, can you describe, at least in general terms, how close that final decision really was?
Well, I will tell you, Gino, that they don't tell us what the vote tally is. Everybody loads their, we all have laptops in front of us. And they say, okay, it's time to vote, and a countdown clock, 10-second countdown clock appears on your screen, and then the ballot pops up. It's very dramatic, and you vote, and you sit there, and then they say, whatever it would have been, Alabama is 9, or was it Alabama is 9? Miami is 10, Notre Dame is 11. And sometimes they'll say it was close or it wasn't close, but we don't know how each other voted. We know who, obviously we've all been debating back and forth, so you know who thinks what in rough terms, but not everybody speaks every time. So, it was, I obviously, the greatest issue was those three teams, and we didn't begin meeting until after the Virginia Duke game. In terms of, we met early in the day just to kind of go over the noon game for about 20 minutes, and then the 4 o'clock game started, but we didn't actually have a meeting until after Virginia Duke, which was about midnight. And we went from midnight to about 2. And then we broke up, and then we got back together at 7:30 and went till 9:30 or 10, something like that. At some point we had to break because the show was coming up. It may have been after 10 even.
Last thing for me here, Ivan. So yes, you guys go until 10 and you've put together the bracket. Everybody say, hey, this is a pretty good bracket, or what? How did people feel? And then secondly, I'm sure you knew this was going to be a very, much discussed result. Did the amount of backlash and hue and cry take you at all by surprise?
A little bit, by surprise. Intellectually, it didn't take me by surprise, but then when you're faced with it and you really feel the emotion of people, I haven't been the subject of the brunt of something like that, before. Obviously I've had stories, that people didn't like and told me they didn't like. We all have gone through that, and this is similar to that. When we finished, how did we feel? I mean, there's always this sort of self-congratulatory moment. Hey, this is a really good, we really nailed this one, but that's, I think, part and parcel of any process. You want to feel, you like to feel good when you finished it. And it was, it is pretty intellectually, it's thorough. I don't know if rigorous is the right word, but it's thorough, and people may not like the way we decided, but I'll still take a human committee over what that BCS nightmare we all live through 10 times out of 9.
Amen.
One other thing, I lied, sorry, Ivan. We do have to discuss your bookstore appearance. Be at the Homs bookstore at Notre Dame. Very nice bookstore.
Yeah.
Do a book signing, yeah. Frank Leahy book, as Gino noted. And that's going to be Friday at what time?
4:30.
4:30. Okay. So
4:30. Yeah.
Or others want to come by and get a book and get it signed. There you go. But this looked like it wasn't going to happen for a minute. Directly related to your membership on the committee. Can you kind of just walk us through what happened and then ultimately didn't happen there?
Yes. Wednesday was quite the day. They called and said, we're really concerned, and they're very nice people. And I've appeared at the bookstore. I think it's pronounced Hamas.
Okay.
But yeah. And I've been there twice already, and they were delightful, and everybody couldn't have been more welcoming, and the book was well received. But they called me and said, we just don't feel good about this, and we're really concerned. And I said, hey, I've been yelled at before, it'll be fine. And we had that sort of tennis ball back and forth ping pong conversation, and I finally realized they really wanted me to say it was okay if we didn't do it. And I said, fine. And then the minute I hung up, I went, no, that's not really good. Cause if that happens, then you're letting all that noise out there and anger and Twitter rage, have its way. And so, once it became public, nobody at the athletic department and nobody in the university administration had any knowledge that the bookstore felt this way and that the bookstore made this decision. And once it blew up, they couldn't move quickly enough to reverse the decision. And everybody meant well, the decision got reversed. Pete Bavakwa called me to apologize. And I said, Pete, how's your day going? And I said, there's no need to apologize. Everybody was acting in good faith, but, I will be at the bookstore, Friday at 4:30. I'll be at Joseph Beth in Cincinnati Saturday, and then I'm speaking at the South Bend, back in South Bend, Sunday at the museum. So everybody that wants to take a shot will certainly have their chance. And well, I will listen.
There you go.
It's a terrific book, man.
Yes, it's a great book. Take a shot, but also buy the book. It's worth it, worth the read.
Thank you.
All right, we'll let you get back on I-75. Thank you for pulling over to talk to us. Great insight on how the committee works, and we'll be back right after this. All right, our thanks to Ivan Maisel for coming on and telling us a little bit how that sausage is made. Let's put a bow on it real quickly here, guys, and then we'll move on to Michigan. The one thought here, I'm glad the bookstore thing worked out, but it is symptomatic of the over-the-top outrage, I thought, from Notre Dame. And Gene, you touched on this at the beginning of the show, that they ginned up an outrage that I thought was somewhat disproportionate to the situation. I agree that I feel badly for them, but we're going to feel badly for somebody. And that's the bottom line. As Ivan said, 3 feet for two shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would like us to get past a little bit of the, you know, whoever isn't in the committee has the right to go absolute scorched earth ballistic for days afterwards. I get being disappointed, but I thought it was too much.
Well, it was too much, and it was directed, in particular from Notre Dame's standpoint, at the ACC, which might have larger implications to the broader college football universe, which we can always get into in future shows. But that to me was the thing that's right. I understood the anger. I understood, you know, the AD coming out and trying to rally the fan base a little bit, and even to a certain extent, bypassing the bowl game. I kind of understood all of that. But just for it to keep going, like you mentioned earlier, Gino, and to have it directed at the league that essentially you are a partial member of, that was the more eye-opening thing that we might have some additional fallout, if you will, over the coming weeks and months from.
I would remind everyone that the ACC, while it was totally mutually beneficial during the COVID years, the ACC reached out a hand to Notre Dame and provided Notre Dame a place to play games and to be basically a member of sorts that year. And this thing went sideways fast. And as Pete Babakwa said, things can be fixed and things heal over time. But to Brian's point, this one didn't sound like there weren't going to be bruise marks for a while. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, the language involved, irreparable damage, that's legal type of language. And they're, you know, I know that the school and the conference have sparred a little bit on, like, the number of conference games the number of ACC games they play. They're supposed to play five every year. Like, they're adding this regular series with Clemson. Notre Dame wants that to be part of that five. The ACC says, no, that's in addition to the five. So these kind of things, there is some skirmishing, I think, going on, or maneuvering at least here. And we're going to see what the overall impact is on the relationship there between the school and the league that they're in 24 other sports. So yeah. Wild times there. But no less wild, maybe even more wild, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Unbelievable situation that blew up on Wednesday afternoon, with the firing of Sharon Moore, the football coach, after two seasons. But it didn't end there. The statement from Michigan was surprisingly specific for why it was firing him. An improper relationship with a staffer. They kind of aired a little bit of the laundry there. And then things got worse. This became more than just a firing of a coach for an off-the-field issue, as Sharon Moore was investigated for an assault, alleged assault, and taken into custody. And, you know, again, as of like 9 this morning, believed to still be in the Washtenaw County Jail. I don't know whether he's been charged yet, but this whole thing has been fairly shocking. But also, there were rumblings, there were some rumors, some discussions like, Sherrone Moore's, he's in trouble there. And it wasn't just wins and losses. So we don't really know fully the timing of what went down, other than the University of Michigan says it got credible information very recently about this situation. But I'm asking you guys here, you know, this blew up in such a dramatic way. Gene O'Brien, what is your reaction to when this thing all blew up?
I thought my jaw had dropped about as far as it could on Selection Sunday when Notre Dame was left out. But then this happened. And as you said at the very top of the show, every time you think college football is going to exhale and maybe just relax for a moment, something crazy happens. So it is a humiliating a fall of grace for Sherrone Moore. And of course, obviously, we have to let the legal process play out, and we'll eventually find out what actually is going on. But it's clear that Michigan is moving forward without him, and said so in pretty stark terms that you normally don't see in that kind of statement, to be that specific. So Michigan once again faces a scandal, and that is becoming sort of the way of the world in Ann Arbor, in that football program, which is just, there's an ideal and a philosophy that Michigan likes to say it adheres to. But in this case, there's no denying that this Michigan man idea is really vaporized at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, Pat, to your point, I mean, there were certain rumors, if you will, that something was going on in the Michigan program, that there was some sort of investigation. But, you know, the fact that, you know, Sherrone Moore was doing his signing day press conference, you know, just a couple of days ago. I mean, I saw the AD Ward Manuel on Tuesday morning, you know, getting coffee, and, you know, it didn't seem like anything was amiss. So this definitely came fast and hard there in Ann Arbor in terms of the speed that this happened in transition from, all right, we're doing something, to, all right, he's fired. You know, this happened extremely quickly. And I think just the surprise that everybody has, you know, it's you think the program is going one direction, you know, they finished 9-3 this year, and then boom, they're now in the middle of a coaching search. And I think there's also some additional questions over Ward Manuel. There's no school president right now, like that clouds a coaching search. You know, we've seen the Michigan Regents be pretty hands on in terms of everything that's been going on with the whole Big Ten deal and what's going on with the private equity piece and everything that, so they've been pretty hands-on with athletics as is. And now you drop this in there. So I think there's a lot of things going on there at Michigan in general, beyond just the fact that, hey, they don't have a football coach right now, which is crazy to think about, given the way we kind of expected this week to go. We did not have this on our plate. And I think it makes for a fascinating search, because you kind of wonder, all right, is that ink dry for Matt Campbell, you know, in Penn State? You know, he would have been one of the top candidates. Probably would have been his top job if he had his druthers. It would be good to go to Michigan, you know, instead of Penn State. But obviously he's in State College right now. He's been in that cap, and he's moving forward there. It's just a fascinating time on the coaching carousel, you know, in terms of, you got a lot of candidates out there that have either changed jobs recently. You know, it's kind of after the cycle, if you will. You know, a lot of kids have even signed. So it was a lot. It was a lot this week. And I imagine it's still going to be a lot there in Ann Arbor, given the fallout that we're going to have, not only locally, but nationally, given the impact of this job.
Now, the problem, as Gene alluded to, is it's been a lot for a while in Ann Arbor. It has been a succession of issues, some more serious than others. I mean, and I don't want to compare Connor Stallions with a potential assault and other situations, potential criminal situation with Sherrone Moore here. But just the pileup of stuff has been incredible. At a time when they were also, they had as much success as Michigan has had in a long time for a 3-year period, where they went to the playoff 3 straight times, and then they won the playoff and went 15-0 the 1 year in 2023. So But while that was going on, there were two major NCAA investigations. There was the Not a Cheeseburger investigation of impermissible recruiting and impermissible use of off-field coaches that led to sanctions. And then there was the Stallions piece, which went on and on and on and resulted in a massive fine of the program, like $30 million, multiple suspensions. Jim Harbaugh was suspended. Sharon Moore was suspended. And then again, the more serious, the criminal stuff, these really disturbing allegations against former offensive coordinator Matt Weiss, that he had unauthorized access to computers and aggravated identity theft, with the allegation that he was taking pictures, private pictures of college students, athletes from around the country, and depositing them basically in his own hard drives. And for whatever purpose, I don't really want to know. But, and then you have this Sharon Moore situation there. And yeah, I'm sorry, I don't want to hear the Michigan man thing. Right. I do not want to hear that we are the leaders and the best. They are, right now, they look like an SEC school. And frankly, SEC schools would be embarrassed to have some of this stuff going on. So this is a time where Michigan has succeeded greatly, and it has put itself in a lot of really embarrassing, tawdry situations as well. So a bit of a reality check for who Michigan is, who it thinks it is versus who it really is at this point, in my opinion.
Preach.
Yeah. Well, we will see where this goes. So to that point, Brian, you laid out a little bit of the some of the problems here. A lot of coaches that would probably like this job have other jobs, recently took other jobs, recently agreed to new contracts. You wrote about who could be candidates on Wednesday. How do you see this search playing out?
Well, who's running it would be my kind of first big question. You know, is it going to be Ward Manuel's hire? Is it going to be somebody else's there at Michigan? You know, who's the ultimate boss, not only in terms of running the search, you know, are they going to get a search firm? I think there's actual process considerations that we got to kind of figure out here with Michigan, especially how fresh this news is and really how much they're all going to be dealing with. You know, just it doesn't seem like it's going to be an interim Biff Pogge, you know, use the cutoffs and, you know, go with it for an interim period. And then we'll make a hire down the road after we kind of sort all that out. It does seem like they at least would like to, you know, move at somewhat quickly to get another guy, especially because the transfer portal, that deadline's not moving. And that is certainly coming up fast and furious with some big considerations, including their star quarterback, as we all know, who I think that'll be a big factor in terms of the speed of the search. But in terms of the names, you know, I think you can start with Kalen DeBoer. You know, he's obviously a Midwestern guy. You know, I think the fit there at Alabama, I think if you're Kalen DeBoer too, and this comes open and look, there's certainly been some reports that he was flirting or Penn State was flirting with him. And I think you could maybe take that with a grain of salt in terms of, you know, his interest in the Nittany Lions. He's certainly been, says he's happy. He says his family's happy there at Alabama. But, you know, there are two things that I think if you're Kalen DeBoer, you should seriously consider saying, giving a call to Michigan. And the fact that, number one, Paul Feinbaum is not running for Senate. And so he will be there to pester you every single time that you lose. That would be number one. Number two, you could see the fan reaction there at Alabama in terms of after they lost that SEC championship game, they're like, all right, we don't want to go to the playoffs. You know, like with this, they were kind of over the era. And it kind of seems like what we've seen out of Brian Kelly and LSU earlier, that maybe that fan base just has not, you know, gotten their grip around this Kalen DeBoer era. And, you know, I think that maybe looking for an exit clause, as good a job as Alabama is, Michigan's also a pretty dang good job that you can win a national title at. And it comes with less of the baggage that you have to deal with at a place like Alabama. So that'd be kind of where you might want to start. But there's going to be a lot of names. And I am going to be very curious to see, are they going to go to somebody with Michigan ties? You know, somebody like, you know, Jesse Minter is out there. Obviously, the Chargers coordinator, he does have a show cause attached to him. So there's some complicating factors with that. But, you know, are you going to go with somebody connected to Jim Harbaugh, somebody who connected to the program, maybe that played for Michigan? There's certainly a number of coaches out there that do have maize and blues ties. But Or are they going to completely cut ties with those, you know, and go outside the family, if you will? I think that's going to be an interesting thing. You got Jed Fish out there. He's a former assistant there. I think he's going to be a name that gets connected a lot with this job. So it could go a number of different directions. But the bottom line is this is a blue blood. It is one of those top jobs. It is a place that has shown that you can win a national title. They have the resources now. I think there's going to be a lot of coaches interested in this one.
Two quick things. One, they're very lucky to have Biff Poggi available in this situation. Remember, he was the interim coach earlier in this season when Sharon Orr was suspended, and he did a fine job. And he, his kids played at Michigan. He was on Harbaugh's staff. He knows how that program works, and he'll be a steadying force. So I think they're very fortunate to have Biff Poggi, be it in an interim role or moving forward. So long shot moving forward, but for right now, very fortunate to have him. Secondly, and I said it earlier in the season, I'm sure I'll get mocked, but I think your first call has to go to Nick Saban. I think you just have to ask him, do you have any interest in this? And maybe it's a two-year thing. And we need somebody to come in here with gravitas, with credibility, with a guy who used to coach in the Big Ten, by the way, somebody who can steady this and won't do any of this craziness that's gone on with this program. So I think you at least have to call him and ask him. He'll say no, but I think you at least have to call him and ask him. And as for Brian's other candidates, sure, they all have their pros and cons. My first thought was, I wonder what Matt Campbell's thinking at this exact moment.
Yeah. No, I think that's a legitimate thought. And I will say, I wonder, in retrospect, if some of this was percolating, maybe on agent circles and that sort of thing. There was a little bit of a hitch in the giddy-up, obviously, with the Penn State search, right? It kind of lingered there, and all of a sudden there was, like, some different unusual candidates, and I almost wonder if there were some people out there waiting to see, is the Michigan shoe going to drop?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And if that complicated things, and then it finally does drop after signing day, after the cycle's basically complete, and now it's a whole different ballgame. I will be fascinated to see. Saban, sure, if you can get him, I just don't think he's going to do it.
I agree.
The other Alabama coach, DeBoer, I think that's a really interesting one there. If they lose to Oklahoma on December 19th, is he in play? Would he want to be in play? How does that go down? And then if not, where does it go from there? I suspect, talking to a few people, that this would probably be an opportunity for Michigan to move away from the Harbaugh tree, you know, like a Jesse Minter or anybody else. I don't think that would be in play. There may be some people pushing for it, including Jim Harbaugh himself, but I think the administration, what there is, and even Ward Manuel, who is, I think, pretty exhausted dealing with Harbaugh, might want to go his own way there if he does get the chance to make this hire. Because, look, Sharon Moore didn't go well. Juwan Howard went well for a little while in basketball. Then it went poorly. Dusty May, the new hire, very good, but Sharon Moore's had a couple mistakes for sure. All right, real quickly, guys, I want to get your Heisman thoughts. I know Brian and I are voters. Gino, are you still a voter?
I gave it up last year.
Okay. So you can say, who would you vote for, Gene, if you had a vote?
I would have to vote for Pavia. Very, very difficult vote, I think, this year. You might think otherwise. I know you guys aren't going to say who you voted for. I totally get it. But I thought Jeremiah Love has a really compelling case. I think Sayin out of the four would probably be fourth on my ballot. I know Mendoza is going to be likely the number one draft pick, but I don't choose my Heisman winners based on what they're going to do or where they're going to be chosen in the NFL draft. So as the most outstanding college football player, I think this year it was Pavia.
Brian, what are your overall thoughts, yeah, on the
I wish we had more, you know, some of the finalists in New York, so we could tell their stories and all that. And I think if you know the Heisman Trophy has been at least listening, that the Trust itself has been listening to and incorporating some tweaks and changes this year. You know, in terms of the voting period, it didn't open until essentially kind of the end of the first quarter of the SEC championship game, and you had to get it in by Monday as usual. But the voting period itself was truncated compared to, you know, past years, which I think is probably going to have an impact on ultimately who wins this. But I mean, there were so many great players and options and stories. And like, you know, I would imagine when we actually look at the final voting tallies, you know, there's going to be a ton of guys that end up getting second place, third place votes. I think the first place votes are going to be split. So I think it's going to be a fascinating race if you want to kind of look at it from that that perspective. But I mean, there were so many great candidates, and you mentioned the quarterbacks there. I think it's going to be interesting between. I'm sure Julian Sands' performance in the Big Ten title game didn't help him at all in terms of getting the ultimate win. You wonder about vote splitting with Jeremiah Smith and if he's going to gather, a little more momentum there in the Midwest. You got, certainly Mendoza and Pavia are probably going to be your 1-2 in some sort of order, just based on looking at some of the odds and how others are talking. But really just a fascinating year and a difficult decision. I mean, this was one of the more difficult decisions I had, not just in terms of, who's one and who's two, but like, all right, who's going to be that third guy? That you are going to throw out there, because there were a lot of deserving candidates this year, and nobody really kind of like seized that momentum, seized the race and seized the trophy. And that's not a bad thing. It's just kind of reflective on, it was a very broad year in terms of candidates.
Yeah. I would have loved a 5-person ballot this year. It's always 3, and yeah, it's fine. You know, it's like, hey, our choices, just like the committee had to make. Somebody had to be left out. Couple people had to be left off the ballot, but I could have voted for the 4 finalists: Fernando Mendoza, Diego Pavia, Julian Sand, and Jeremiah Love. Absolutely. I would have liked a 5th spot for Jacob Rodriguez, the linebacker from Texas Tech.
Good
11
call.
Takeaways on his own, 7 forced fumbles, 4 interceptions, leading tackler on a great defense. And talk about a story. This guy was a walk-on quarterback at Virginia. And they used him as kind of a Taysom Hill athlete guy that just did stuff. He transfers home. He's from Wichita Falls, Texas, becomes a linebacker, and he's phenomenal on this, up from the bootstraps team. So I would like to have seen Jacob Rodriguez get to New York, but again, there's only so many votes to go around, so many places. All right, guys, our time for our commenters commenting on comments, Facebook. Segment here. Comments come from Facebook groups. It's presented by Facebook, and we have got 4 comments, and I'm going to ask you guys to respond to some of them. I will respond to some of them. This one's for Brian from Ariel. I love Matt Campbell to Penn State. He might be exactly what we needed. What do you think?
I'm right there with you, Ariel. I think this was when you could have, number one, when you're grading the hire and when you're looking at who Penn State could have hired, initially, like, Matt Campbell was top of the list, in terms of potential candidates that would have taken the job and done a great job there. He's a maximizer of talent. He's going to do that at Penn State. He's a guy that maybe the floor is a little bit lower compared to James Franklin, because he always seemed to win those games that you expected Penn State to win. But the ceiling is a little bit higher in terms of getting those upsets that Penn State fans have desperately needed. He was there, knocking off Texas, knocking off Oklahoma with, essentially one hand tied behind his back at Iowa State in terms of the roster he could build. He's going to kill it at Penn State, I think, in terms of, getting those wins that that Penn State fan base really wants to see.
All right, I'll answer Lawrence's question. Who cares if the Irish turned down a bowl? If you all could name who played in last year's Pop-Tarts Bowl without looking it up, I will buy a steak dinner for each of you. Give me some steak, Lawrence. That was Iowa State and Miami. And the main reason I remember is because Cam Ward played like 1 quarter, right? And then said, I'm out. So that's the main reason. That's what I get your point, Lawrence, that first of all, Notre Dame playing in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, just on name alone, I think that, if this were the Gator Bowl or the Citrus Bowl, things might have been a little easier to finesse. But Pop-Tarts Bowl is a good bowl. They do get Pop-Tarts out of it, but I understand Notre Dame's situation. I wish they would have played I'm not going to make a federal case out of it, but I do know Miami and Iowa State. It was like 43-42 or something. Gino.
Yeah.
Wade wants to know, did Greg Sankey force the committee to pick Alabama over ND? How could they watch both teams and believe Bama is better? It's so corrupt. Do we have corruption, Gene?
First of all, Facebook, thank you for sponsoring us these yes. weeks. And secondly, really, that's the question you had to give me, Pat? The Greg Sankey conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
No, of course not. I mean, look, if you listen to Ivan earlier in this podcast, you can criticize the committee all you want, and they know that going in. But I don't think you can criticize the integrity of the committee. I truly believe they try to do the best job they can with the information that they have, and they make a decision, and they're not always popular decisions. Greg Sankey wasn't within 10,000 miles of being inside that room. Every constituency is given an opportunity to make a case for their teams, and that did happen previous to it. And Notre Dame, by the way, Ron Polis of that athletic department made a presentation to the committee. Everybody gets a chance to do that. So the committee acted on its own. Greg Sankey, while we can argue he might be the most powerful person in college athletics, in this case, was powerless when it came to deciding who would be in the field. There so no go. Corruption.
No, sorry. I'm with you. Sorry, I know it sounds good, but there was no corruption there. And all right, I just very savvily closed the document here, but I did have the last question. I can't remember who asked it, but it was, if Indiana and Kurt Cignetti go 16-0, is this the greatest coaching job ever? The answer is yes, it is. Indiana 16-0 is so preposterous, it's beyond belief. And I think they can do it. I actually think they're good enough, although they had a major injury to a defensive end in the fall, yeah. in the celebration after winning the Big Ten championship. Not good. All right, winners and steak dinners. We have one game to pick. We'll pick it quickly. Since I closed the document, I don't even know what the standings are. I just
Is that so, Pat? Yeah, yeah. You guys don't want to talk about going 1-4 last week between the two of you?
I don't recall.
I'm having audio problems. I didn't hear anything that Brian just said.
Brian, I think continues to win. We continue to lose. I think Gino's in the middle, and I'm at the bottom, of course. But our one game, Army Navy, wonderful game. Love it every year. Love everything about both programs. And both teams are good, which is great. I'm very happy when both teams are good. In this instance, Navy's giving 6.5. Brian, you're winning. Make your pick.
Oh, you know, the head says this is going to be a tight, low-scoring, randomly decided in the fourth quarter type of affair that always seems to be the case in this game. I am going to go with Navy, though. Both heart and head say the Navy. Just a better team this year. You know what? And I think the more explosive offense, I think in this case, ends up covering the 6.5. So give me the midshipmen.
Well, I agree with you on many levels, Brian. But I also have spent considerable time during this season touting the many accomplishments of Jeff Monken. And I guess I need to put my money where my Monken is. Well, I think Brian Newberry is a fabulous coach and has done great work there. And I do think Navy is the better team this season. I will take the 6.5 points and hope for a tight game.
Oh, boy. I was hoping you guys would both go Navy so I could go Army and try to regain a little here. But what's the point? I'm not regaining enough. So give me... give me Navy. I just did the diversity of the offense. They've got more weapons. They've been pretty darn explosive. So I'm taking the midshipmen. We'll be watching. Salute to all players involved and all members of the student body at both schools. All right, real quick before we go, guys, we have to hit this, a Christmas themed, scandal of sorts. at a prison in South Carolina. And the AP continues to come through with creative writing. This is tremendous. Bishopville, South Carolina, Dateline. 'Twas 3 weeks before Christmas, and in the prison yard, a drone-dropped package was found by a guard with steak, weed, and crab legs and cigarettes for days, and to season it all, a tin of Old Bay. Yes, a drone dropped in, a luxury meal, cigarettes, and pot for some lucky prisoner. Unfortunately, not lucky enough because they didn't get it. The guards got it instead. I guess they ate the ingredients. I hope the steak and the crab legs could stay fresh enough to eat here. The steak was not cooked. It was still in the shrink wrapped like you just pull it out of the grocery. But I have to ask you my question, gentlemen. First of all, genius or not. But secondly, if you're in prison, if you're in the lockup, and you've got to have a Christmas meal dropped in for you, what are you ordering?
First of all, that sounds like a 40 family Christmas.
Including the location. It's not out of the question. We might have some relatives in the lockup. It's not.
I am living in the Chicago area where we have something called Chicago beef sandwiches. Mm. I don't know if you've ever had one, but there are some very fine Chicago beef restaurants, one right down the street. And I am a sucker for all things Chicago beef sandwich. We call them baptized, where you basically dunk them into the sauce. So that would be my meal.
What's the sauce?
Oh, it's kind of like a beef gravy sauce.
Sweet. That sounds pretty good.
It's an angioplasty waiting to happen, but they're delicious.
Brian, you got a prison meal?
I don't know. Steak and crab legs sounds pretty good to me. You know, like I don't think you can go wrong on that one. Maybe some scallops. You know, I'm a sucker for scallops. I don't know how that would necessarily fare if you're getting it airdropped. So I'll stick with the steak and crab legs there.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're a little high maintenance here and a little overly optimistic about the shelf life of said drone drop. For that reason, look, I'm going. Give me like a Shakespeare's pizza from Columbia, Missouri. Because what? If pizza, first of all, if it drops hard, it's not going to be messed up. If it sits there for a few hours before you can get to it, it's fine. Cold pizza's okay. I was on a TV show called Cold Pizza for quite a while at one point at ESPN. So I think you have to tailor your prison food drop to the circumstances. How long is it going to take you to get it? And are you going to have to battle the guards to get it as well?
That sounds like a guy who served some hard time in county lockup. way too confident about all the options there.
You know, look, I mean, we've lived a hard life over here, you know. We're straight off the streets of the mean streets of Colorado Springs. You know how it goes. So anyway, clearly, and that's our show. That's enough. Appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate Ivan Maisel for being a guest. We appreciate Facebook for the comments to respond to. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week.